Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Make It Monday Forum. My name is Marty Buscaglia. I'm Vice President of Advertising at the Anchorage Daily News, and I'm also a board member of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and I'm honored to be here with you today. I invite everyone at this time to please stand up and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. At this time, I ask you to please silence your cell phones, and if you do need to take a call, please do step out in the hallway so that you don't interrupt our speakers. We'd appreciate that. I'd like to quickly recognize the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce board members that are here with us today. If you can just either stand up or wave your hand so people can see you. Bill Evans, Chris Birch, Anchorage Assembly, and Mort Plum from the Plum Group. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Now I'd like to introduce the distinguished members at the head table here. To my immediate right is Bruce Lamoureux, Chief Executive of Providence's Alaska Region. To Bruce's right is Joe Riggs, owner of Alaska Healthcare Strategies, our new member at the head table this week. Joe is here today to tell us a little more about his company's products and services. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Riggs.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Chamber and Chamber members. I appreciate the opportunity to practice my speaking skills with you and hopefully make Bruce look really good following me up. You know, Brenda kind of gave me the update on what to be expected of me and made sure that I knew what 3 minutes could be a very long time for some people. And I replied, well, geez, you know, 3 minutes can go by just like that. And I think Helcro's going to probably have to pull me off the stage. So don't worry, I'll fill in 3 minutes pretty easily. Again, my name's Joe Riggs. I'm the CEO, CFO, and the sole employee of Alaska Healthcare Strategies. I work with hospitals and surgery centers statewide, Providence, Alaska being my largest client. Thank you, Bruce. In a nutshell, I help Bruce and his staff do what I believe he's going to talk about today in a very specialized field of the hospital, orthopedic surgery in the OR. The company that I represent, a national company called ComEd Livintech, they provide technology and that delivers the maximum return on investment with the greatest patient outcomes. So in other words, if you ever break something and you have the opportunity to go visit one of Bruce's ORs, everything from the video equipment to the power tools to everything that's put in your body is something that I've dealt with and brought into the hospital and help the surgeons put into you. But since I'm not really here to try to drum up business from you, you're going to do that eventually on your own. I'll take a minute to talk about me since this is kind of like Rotary. I get to talk about myself without getting fined. I've been in Alaska for over 20 years. My wife is a third generation Alaska. Amber is she owns a medical practice here in town for about 10 years. So needless to say, I understand completely what's coming down the pipeline. My son Riker's 5, and I have a whole heck of a lot of trouble keeping up with them. If you're wondering about this tan, I'm one of the Turnagain Arm kiteboarders, and I do apologize for delaying traffic every summer on Turnagain Arm. Just stop looking and keep driving is what we always say. My background is in education, is in business and finance primarily. Economics is where my education is. I grew up in a family-owned business. I've always been in business. I've written out far more paychecks than I've ever collected. I believe strongly in community service. I serve on the board of Challenge Alaska. I'm also on the board of the Blood Bank of Alaska. And I also have a strong interest in public policy, both local and on the statewide level. I was appointed by Mayor Sullivan to the Anchorage Budget Advisory Commission. And I want to thank any members of the assembly or the administration for taking so much stock in our work lately. I see Chris Birch back there. I'm a member of Commonwealth North, which Bruce is a board member of. and I was a participant in the report, Alaska's Oil Investment Tax Structure, which, as we've all heard about over the past few years, has been a popular theme among the legislature. So in other words, I pretty much joined the chamber not to promote my own business because I don't really need to. It's coming my way. You're all going to break something eventually. But hopefully, I'll be provided with the opportunity to help you promote yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. I hope I won't be breaking something very soon. But welcome to the Anchorage Chamber. Now onto today's topic and presentation. As chief executive, Bruce Lamoureux is responsible for overall operations of Providence's Alaska region. Lamoureux has been with Providence Health and Services Alaska since 2006, when he assumed the role of chief executive for Providence Alaska Medical Center. During that time, he led the medical center through growth and change, including the opening of a new cancer center and the establishment of a neuroscience center and telestroke program. Originally from Quebec, Canada, Lamoureux relocated to Los Angeles as a teenager. That's my old stomping grounds. He joined Providence in 2006 after serving as president and chief executive officer at a tertiary hospital in Los Angeles since 1997. He has more than 30 years of experience in hospital operating activities. Lamoureux holds a BA in management from the University of Redlands in Redlands, California, and a master's degree in business administration from the University of Southern California. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome today's presenter, Bruce Lamoureux.
Thank you, Marty. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
All right. We're off to a good start. Holy cow. Okay, so here's the game plan. Tell you a little bit about Providence. We're not going to admire the problem today, so all you had to do this morning was open your favorite news source and hear how healthcare is broken. If you thought you were coming here to talk about what the problems are, wrong place. We're going to focus differently. I want to talk about three domains of healthcare having potential impact on the costs of care. And those are what you and I can do as individuals, how the market is shifting ever so rapidly, and what the impact of consumerism will be on the market. And then this idea of Medicaid expansion and what the business model for that expansion may be. And then we'll do some question and answer and see where that gets us. So Providence has the wonderful privilege of having served Alaskans now for 111 years. The Sisters of Providence arrived in Nome, Alaska in 1902. That was their first foray into the Alaska environment. It was part of the gold rush, so if I can call your attention to the slide, on the bottom left-hand side is the 4th of July parade in Nome, Alaska in 1901. Gold rush community, mining town, obviously, and predominantly men in that community. And over the ensuing few years, the slide on the right-hand side, the larger slide is, or photo, I should say, is of Holy Cross Hospital, which is the first Providence hospital in Alaska. And while it's dated 1902, it was actually 1905. And then shown traveling are Sisters of Providence in the early days. I contrast that experience with the experience I have and other people in healthcare have today. And it's really quite dramatic, both in its complexity as well as the operating environment we have compared to 1902 Nome. Really dramatic change. And therein lies some of the challenge for healthcare. We have the privilege of serving in a number of communities in South Central Alaska, from Palmer to Kodiak and Anchorage to Cordova. The programs we have in each of the communities are a little bit different, in some cases dramatically different, but in all instances, again, the privilege of serving in those communities. Now, typically when we talk about affordability of healthcare, we talk about things of this sort, whether it's leverage because of scale economy, inefficiencies in the larger healthcare system. But these really are the usual suspects and not what I want to use your time for today. There's interesting stuff. I could go on for too long a time talking about them, and really you'd be bored to death. Your faces would be in your plates in no time, and it really isn't talking about short-term solutions that you can understand or necessarily would be interested in. So the opportunity in healthcare is huge. These are varied sources of waste, inefficiency, fraud and abuse, preventable conditions, misdiagnoses, misadventures, every possible thing you can imagine about what is not working in healthcare is captured, or at least an attempt is made in this slide to capture those kinds of opportunities. And it's thought that if, in fact, all of those could be extracted from the healthcare system, that, in fact, some $700 billion dollars of improper, inefficient, unnecessary, fraudulent use could be applied to the care of people who have a need and to reduce the costs of care. So the opportunity is absolutely huge. But let's start with you and me and the individual impact on costs. So look at this slide. It's probably the most important slide I have for you today. And it's kind of a math exercise. So if you were going to fix something, say the costs of healthcare, would you focus on the 15% part of the pie? Or might you turn your attention to the 85% portion of the pie? And in fact, if coming into this session today, your thought has been, geez, I sure hope we can fix healthcare. I sure hope he has some idea about what we can do. I'm not going to fix it, messing around with the 15% that has to do with healthcare delivery. It's simple math, folks, simple math. What we need to do in healthcare is critically important. It's big. It's that $700 billion in the prior slide. But it is not going to fix the costs of care. The larger piece of the pie is around socioeconomic issues. So the interest that United Way has in elevating graduation rates for high school. That's important. The Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's program, Live, Work, and Play. That's important. Poverty or affluence, key determinants in the well-being of a population. So if we think of the 300,000 or so people who reside in the Anchorage Borough municipality, the socioeconomic dimensions for health and well-being are much more important and impactful than the bit we can do in healthcare. Now, I'm not diminishing the import, I'm not diminishing the impact, and I'm not shifting attention away from healthcare. We need to own our highly fragmented, dysfunctional industry. No two ways about it. But if you and I think that it's going to be fixed out of healthcare alone, we're deluding ourselves. So here's a test for you. I want you to raise your hand. I want you to raise that hand high, proudly. If you can claim the bragging rights to exercising 20 minutes three times a week, not smoking, eating multiple portions of fruits and veggies, wearing your seat belts 100% of the time, and having a normal body mass index. Get them up there. Come on, get them up. Be proud. Keep them up. Now look around. There are probably 30 or 40 hands up in the audience. Okay, you can put them down now. Actually, you should have pulled them down really quick. Do you know what percent of the U.S. population really, really meets these five descriptors? Come on, take a poke. 10? 20? Do I hear anything else? 3%. There you go. Well, you must have been at the Rotary 2 weeks ago. So it is 3%. Now, there must have been 30 hands up in this audience and, 100 people? So what's wrong with that math? And guys, more of you had your hands up because you and I are more delusional than the women are. We think that belly hanging over our belts is made of steel. Now, the sad truth is that if only we would pay attention to our physicians and nurses and the latest news program, we would do more to impact the cost of healthcare than anything healthcare can do. And if you're worried about the premiums you're paying on behalf of your employees, if you are worried as an employee or a user of healthcare at what seems to be the diminution in your health benefits provided by whatever the source is, employer, government, whatever it may be, your out-of-pocket costs, if you want to impact that, you need to own this. You need to own it. Now, I know some individuals suffer from genetic circumstance, conditions that are entirely outside their control. That's a fact. But whatever your unique potential is as an individual, if you realize that potential by eating well, taking care of yourselves, wearing your seatbelt, not smoking, doing these simple things, you will do more to reduce your consumption of healthcare than anything else. It's too easy. You've heard it too many times, and some of you are just not going to hear it today again. But if I can get one of you, if I can trick one of you into doing something differently when you walk out the door today, I will have succeeded. All right, so the market impact. Here's my iPhone. And on my iPhone right now, you can't see it too far, is my heart rhythm tracing, which I took a little while ago. And if, in fact, I needed a heart rhythm tracing, which fortunately so far today I don't, but the day is young, and I had been prescribed this app by my cardiologist and had concerns about how I was feeling, maybe felt some lightheadedness, fatigue, something out of the ordinary. I could now actually transmit this heart rhythm reading, tracing, to my cardiologist. I did this. I had two options. On the back of my iPad are two metal bands, and I can do my heart rhythm tracing by holding the iPhone this way, or I can place it on my chest, bare skin, and take it that way. I was going to demonstrate the latter, but I knew that it was too close to lunchtime and it would just make people ill, so I'll spare you that. The point is, item one on this list of future truths is that digital technology, mobility, is going to turn our world upside down. Starting in January of 14, as a Providence employee, I can use my iPhone and access a program called CastLight. CastLight will show me the costs of various medical procedures here in Anchorage and elsewhere where the Providence Health Plan has purchased service. What does that mean? Well, if you're a weekend warrior, as Joe is trying to trick you into being because Joe has a perverse incentive like Bruce, you might find yourself in the orthopod's office on Monday, and she might say to you, you know, this knee injury worries me, and I'd like to get an MRI. In fact, I've got an MRI down the hall, so come with me and we'll just go get that. You would be able to say, hold on, Kemosabe, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to find out what the cost of an MRI is here in your office, and let's just pretend she says $1,000. I'll be able to use my iPhone, check out MRI prices in Anchorage, and maybe have a conversation that says, you know, I could go to Alaska Regional Hospital or the Alaska Spine Institute or the Providence Imaging Center and get an MRI of the knee for $600. How do you think that transaction unfolds from that point forward? You and I, myself included, okay, so it's not just you who can't see behind the curtain. God forbid that I need health care and have to decipher the charges for that care for myself or my spouse. It's a nightmare. And one of the problems is lack of transparency. So consumerism is critically important and will do more to change the costs of care than just about anything else. And if you didn't like the heart rhythm tracing because your heart is just fine, thank you very much, but maybe you've got a problem with blood sugar, well, let me tell you, there's an app for blood sugar and sweat test, and it's growing and growing and growing. So increasingly, the mystery of care and its delivery is going to be exposed. Item two, care delivery models, the use of things like telehealth. Right now, not tomorrow, right now, I can go online, Skype, some other video conferencing technology, agree to pay the $45 or $50 credit card fee, and access care for mild illness. Now, compare that to my daughter's visit last spring, I think it was, to the Providence ED, and a few thousand dollars of costs. Shifts in the financing of care. We do not have, in Alaska, much in the way of risk-bearing, that is, fixed payment or actually assuming the risks of delivering care, whatever the costs may be. That's quite prevalent in the lower 48, and it's coming to a theater near us. Now, whether that's 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, I have no clue. And whatever I tell you is wrong. It's just a matter of how wrong, right? But risk-based systems will impact the costs of care because providers will pay attention to precluding, preventing misadventure. And if there is misadventure, it's on the provider's nickel, not yours and mine. And then industry changes. New competitors. Retail pharmacies opening clinics. I was in Los Angeles about 6 weeks ago. Got dragged to the local CVS. And while Nadia, my wife, ran off and did what she needed to do, I was left to my own means and looked around the CVS and saw in the corner Minute Clinic. So I hightailed it over there to see what are they doing. And sure enough, I could sign in at a kiosk. It was incredible. There was a menu of services, and there was pricing. I didn't know what I was looking at. It was so foreign to me coming out of the healthcare industry, but I could actually see what it might cost me to access care for mild illness. There was no edifice. It was a converted closet, so austerity is the name of the game. And I wasn't going to pay ED prices for it. So there are new competitors coming into the industry and turning the world upside down. A very good thing for healthcare costs. And then shifting boundaries. Let me couple a couple of dots here for you. One is, how many of you are fans of Jeopardy? Anyone? A little bit? Okay. Okay. So Jeopardy, sometime back, maybe in the last couple, 3 years, had a computer, IBM's Watson computer, programmed, and Watson defeated the super-duper Jeopardy champions. Watson right now is being programmed at Johns Hopkins, because it turns out that in healthcare, you have a 55 or 60% chance of getting the right diagnosis the first time out, the right treatment for that diagnosis, assuming it's the right one, the first time out. And if you're a doctor who graduated from MD Anderson, and I'm a doctor graduating from Stanford, we both learn to practice medicine in different ways. And your way, the MD Anderson way, is of course the Sterling way to practice medicine. Unless, of course, you went to Stanford or UCLA or Johns Hopkins or elsewhere. We are a boutique industry. We allow our providers to practice independently. They are superb people, but it is humanly impossible for the very brightest among us to keep track of every new bit of research every day. Impossible. And so Watson is being programmed with decision trees and treatment algorithms with the idea that that kind of resource placed in the hands of superb clinicians will result in more accurate diagnoses, better treatment regimens, and a sharing of best practices, the replicability of best practices across broad geography. So that is important, but intrinsic to that is an important question. If you are part of one of the professional guilds, be it medicine, nursing, therapy, whatever it is, and you've got a license that says only you can do these things because you are the holder of all knowledge in this domain, what do you think these technologies are going to do to the professional boundaries in those guilds? And the answer is probably some things are going to be done better by licensure levels that are not, say, as high as the physicians, but coupled with these advanced technologies make possible for even better outcomes than the world's brightest physician. So Medicaid. All right. Now, I don't know what your moral persuasion is as an individual or your political affinity, but I'm going to talk about something that's going to tweak you. So here goes. This graph shows, let's take the black horizontal line, third one up from the bottom. That's the cost of health care, what it actually costs. And I'm not talking about the monopoly money you see on a bill from the hospital. I'm talking about the actual costs of delivering care. The two blue lines below the black line are the payments from Medicare and Medicaid, so government, for the care to Medicare, Medicaid subscribers. So you see, in the case of Medicare in 2009, approximately 90% of the costs of care were being reimbursed, which leads us to the line you hate, and that's the one up top, right? Because that's what's happened to your premiums, your out-of-pocket costs, and the interpretation, quite simply, is that you and I are paying for the costs of care to subscribers in the government system. Well-known fact, shouldn't be news. You've probably been hearing this for 30 years. Don't know if you've paid attention to it. Just want to remind you. And now, the Affordable Care Act. One of the elements in the Affordable Care Act is the possibility of expanding Medicaid. And to his great credit, Governor Parnell has said, whoa, I'm not ready to make that decision. I think that is a thoughtful, deliberate choice on his part. And perhaps at the end of 13, he'll be ready to make that decision based on good data and his trusted advisors. But I want to show you the hydraulics in Medicaid. Right now, not tomorrow, not next week, not on October 1, not on January 1, right now, yesterday, money from Alaska began flowing to Washington, D.C. to pay for the Affordable Care Act. And it took different forms. Not all of it is fully implemented, but portions are. One example is that hospital providers have taken a haircut on payments and will continue to do so over ensuing periods. So we will get less funding. If you are an aficionado of tanning salons, you're paying a tax to tan. If your employer provides you with a high-end health benefit plan, in future periods, there will be something called the Cadillac tax, a fee you will pay for getting a richer benefit than is typically available. Now, I could go on giving you other examples of fees and taxes. The point is that funding is leaving Alaska to pay for the act. And our choice is possibly accepting funding, expansion of Medicaid for Alaskans. So it's a simple hydraulic. And in fact, if you look at some of these studies that have been done by reputable, less biased organizations about those hydraulics, you would learn that we can expect in Alaska alone about $200 million a year in incremental economic output for what in future periods will be about $78 million in new costs to Alaskans. So in the first 3 years of Medicaid expansion, 100% of that expansion will be paid for by the federal government from what is leaving Alaska already. And in the ensuing, following that three-year period, Alaska will pay part of up to 10% of Medicaid costs. So if you think about that flow out and in, the math at least, setting aside political persuasion, your own views about the morality of access to care, setting that aside, the math would suggest that, in fact, we ought to be expanding Medicaid. Here is a representation, this from Northern Economic, looking at the economic opportunity associated with expansion of Medicaid in Alaska. And you see on the far right-hand side, by 2020, the economic output associated with that expansion is approximately $600 million. So this helps the Alaska economy. I think there's a rational business decision when we think of this. Without expansion, there's a lower economic output, as I have attempted to suggest. There'll be more in the way of bad debt on the hospital side and pressure on all of our premiums, whether we are self-funded, as in the case of Providence, or perhaps on the market purchasing coverage. We leave significant federal funding on the table that will be used by other states for their own expansion of Medicaid and for government purposes generally. We lose the quickest path to reduce private insurance premiums. So if you're acquainted with or the graph I showed you with the payment against the costs of care, if those resonate for you, then this Medicaid expansion is the way to make that more sensible. And employers will likely face some form of tax penalty in the event we don't do something in response to Medicaid expansion and health insurance exchange. So our commitments are to support the expansion. We are most concerned, by virtue of the history I began the presentation with, about vulnerable people, folks who don't have access to care. We look to make care more affordable. All of the metrics and areas, domains I alluded to from our own individual choices or opportunities to consumerism to Medicaid expansion. And we, Providence, will continue to invest in our communities. So with that, let me invite your questions and comments, please. Okay.
Thank you, Bruce. That was very informative. If you'd like, you can take a seat and answer from there. And you do have pieces of paper at your table. If you have questions, please write them on the white pieces of paper. Hold them up high. A staff member will be by to pick them up. And I'm going to start with, what steps is Providence taking to provide cost transparency to consumers?
Okay. Well, good question. So I mentioned for Providence employee the availability of Castlight. The public is increasingly interested in costs of care and sources for comparison of those costs. So you may have seen some probably 8 weeks ago now, an article in the Wall Street Journal showing the charges, not the costs, not the payments, but the billed charges for hospital care across the entirety of the U.S. One of the big challenges is that the information has been inaccessible in some instances, buried in other instances, camouflaged, or I think in some cases, appropriately, people have been told, well, we can't tell you what it's going to cost because you're a unique person. Well, all of those are true. The problem is you and I have a diminishing tolerance for that answer. And so whether it's Wall Street Journal, Castlight, your own comparison with family members, friends, whatever it may be, increasingly you will see what the costs, out-of-pocket costs, payment costs are for healthcare. But we are in our infancy. People sometimes say to me, you know, if I'm buying a car and spending 20 grand or 50 grand for that car, by God, I'm going to go on the internet and find out what the costs are before I sign up for something. And only in healthcare, if we translated that to car sales, would you have a salesperson saying, well, just go ahead and take it and we'll figure out how much it costs later. So we need a revolution in healthcare.
Thank you. One of our local medical offices advertises all patients seen by a doctor, which assume no PA, et cetera. Is that contrary to the path that you have outlined?
I'm sorry, contrary to?
It seems contrary to the path that you have outlined.
Oh. Well, there are two schools of thought. I think largely it's contrary to the path I've outlined. And the reason I say that is that as transparency takes place, and you and I can be informed consumers, and in the absence of a compelling argument that says, if I go to provider A, I will get a better outcome than if I go to provider B, you're going to vote with your wallet. I am. And so the idea that only a physician can provide the best, highest, and always the most appropriate care, I think is going to be turned on its ear. And if right now our physicians nationwide get diagnosis and treatment algorithms correct 55 to 60% of the time, really, is there no room for improvement in that? And so transparency on pricing, the aid of advanced technologies like Watson, team-based medical and clinical practice are all dynamics that are going to impact both how we access care, where we access care, who delivers that care, and how much that care costs. So the idea that only physicians are going to see you for, say, mild illness will soon grow antiquated. And the downward pressure on pricing will cause at least a vast majority of them to think differently. In fact, they won't be able to maintain current income streams and lifestyles with those diminishing levels of income. So it will require and compel the use of advanced nurse practitioners and others for things that are appropriate for those licensed professionals.
Thank you. Who collects the $700 billion waste? If they can count it, why can't they stop it?
Yeah. Wish I was collecting $700 billion. Wow. So it's really a hodgepodge. If you looked at that pie chart, one sector is fraud and abuse. Just about every week, you read about a provider either being carted off in handcuffs or accused of fraud and abuse. So that's one section. Another is inefficiency. On the prior question, really, do I need a physician to give a diagnose and prescribe a medication? If a nurse practitioner in the right environment is able to accurately and effectively do the same thing, do I need to pay that higher level of cost? If I'm misdiagnosed and sent on the medication adventure, really, should I be paying that? If you come into the hospital, come into Prov-Alaska for a heart problem, and we don't keep you safe and prevent you from falling because, among other things, you're on medications, and now you've got a misadventure, including hip replacement, really, should you be paying for that as a patient, as a buyer? Or should it be on the provider as part of a risk-bearing incentive? So it comes in countless forms, different venues, and really needs to be addressed.
Thank you. And if I don't get this question right, will whoever wrote it please just yell it out? Won't the new law put out of business hospitals that have a disproportionate amount of Medicaid?
The idea of putting hospitals out of business is a fascination for me, among other things. I've been listening to this for all 37 years I've been in healthcare about how we won't need hospitals, and it ain't changing, folks. In fact, we in Alaska have a tripling of Medicare age people over the next two decades. Medicare age people are the biggest consumers of healthcare. And notwithstanding what I've suggested in the domains of individual behavior, consumerism, other dynamics, some of us, and I count myself among you, all of you, or most of you, are going to need healthcare and probably need acute hospitalization at some point, probably. So hospitals aren't going anywhere anytime soon. The Medicaid issue, or government-funded part, you know, imagine that what I showed on the curve, the cost versus payment curve for government-funded healthcare, that 90% or so, if that was universal. So what if, play along here, what if we had universal healthcare in the U.S. and it was at 90% of cost? Well, if nothing changed, yes, hospitals would close because you can't make it up on volume, right? But I've seen tremendous resiliency in hospitals, and I think it would compel a different societal dialogue. And that dialogue is, if I'm 98 years old, need a hip replacement, and I'm absolutely convinced that my Olympic career is about to be resurrected with this new hip implant, really, should I get the titanium implant, or would a simple steel implant at 1/4 the cost be adequate? And if I'm 100 years old and a cardiologist tells me I would benefit from open heart surgery, do we as a society think that's such a hot idea? So are the unbridled costs of care, access to care for anyone, anytime, and this is the death panel, right? This is the death panel conversation that we are not courageous enough to have. And until you and I have that conversation about what is proportionate, what is in the common good, and are we willing to spend all we make on healthcare? I'm in the industry, so if we want to do that, I guess I'm going to be employed a little bit longer. But I'll tell you, as a taxpayer, I'm not fond of it.
Okay, and one last question. And I apologize if we didn't get to your question, but I'm hoping Bruce will stick around a little while longer afterwards to answer any questions. Last question. Can I bring my own bottle of aspirin to save money and donate what I don't use to others in the hospital?
So, yes, but here are the qualifiers. You can't maintain possession of that bottle of aspirin because the nurses, physicians are accountable for making sure, and pharmacists, that the drug interactions are taken into account. So if your cardiologist has you on blood thinners and you're taking aspirin, that's a problem, even though you may not know it, and all you're trying to do is fix the headache. So you have to turn in your meds to the nurse. It has to be in an enclosed container, and when you leave, it's going with you, because we can't be responsible for anything that might be in that bottle and whether or not it somehow has been modified. So yes, you can. The nurses will administer that aspirin to you with your physician's acknowledgement. And those are the rules of engagement today.
Thank you. Let's once again thank Bruce for being here.
Thank you.
And now I'd like to invite Chamber President Andrew Halcrow to the podium. He will close today's lunch. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Marty. And the Anchorage Chamber is been working the last couple of months on the Medicaid expansion issue. And over the last couple of months, the Legislative Committee has been reviewing reports and testimony and talking to those in the industry. And we've arrived at a couple of different positions, not positions, but facts. Every report we've read about Medicaid expansion promotes economic development. There's a group called the Lewin, the Lewin group, right?
Yes.
And then they are national healthcare experts, analysts, and researchers. And they did a report for New Hampshire that we read that clearly described the potential for job growth, additional dollars into the state, additional support for the healthcare system, and by and large covering that huge percentage, which here in Alaska I believe is 1 out of 5, that's uninsured. And if you think those folks at uninsured or Providence's Compassion to write off uncompensated care, the rest of us pay for that. And the challenge that our legislative committee has is that the state of Alaska did the same report as New Hampshire, the Lewin report. And the report was done in December, and it has not been released yet. And that's been our challenge from a legislative committee standpoint, is we have not had anything from the administration to kind of guide us as far as a chamber committee to look at the impacts, both positive and negative, on the local economy, healthcare, and you as business owners and managers, your healthcare costs. So we hope that the administration will release that report. All of the other reports, as I said, we studied New Hampshire's report in committee, very positive. And I think when you look at healthcare and those of us who renew premiums, and we just did this year at the Anchorage Chamber for our staff, it's frightening. And you look out the next couple of years and you wonder, are my revenues going to keep up with expenses? So it's a very important topic. And to let you know, this is the first of three series in healthcare. Next week, we'll hear from Enroll Alaska, who will talk about Medicaid expansion, but the new program where you can enroll, your employees can enroll, and there's different programs where you can help your employees get healthcare coverage and possibly avoid paying the tax next year. So that'll be on the 19th. On the 27th, we're holding a special workshop for small business owners. We'll have the Health and Human Services in the Anchorage Chamber boardroom who will answer questions for about 2 or 3 hours and help small business owners and managers better understand the Affordable Care Act and coverage as we move forward. So it's very important. That's the 27th. So with that, I want to thank Premera Blue Cross for being our quarterly sponsor of Make It Monday Forum. Join us this Thursday for Business After Hours networking at Tailored Restoration. We'll have food catered by Diane's Restaurant and Catering, and you'll receive office tours. The Tailored Restoration is giving away fabulous door prizes. Door prizes include an iPad and a trip for two to Las Vegas. So those are tremendous, tremendous door prizes. You can RSVP, anchoragechamber.org. Also, tables are still available for our Gold Pan Awards, the 56th Annual Gold Pan Awards that are held on September 13th here at the Denina Center. 16 finalists will be celebrated to their contributions from community and business. Okay, now is time for the door prizes. First door prize is a free lunch to next week's Make It Monday Forum from Mark Cording of RE/MAX Dynamic. And the winner is Holly Parsons. And if you just raise your hand, our staff will come by. And the next prize is a Callista Corporation goodie bag. And I'm sure there's supplies of fruits and vegetables in this goodie bag, right? Promoting good health. Joe Riggs. This is four tickets on the Anchorage City Trolley Tours. Peggy Looney. You can re-donate those, absolutely. Michael Ward. And this is a $50 gift card to Allure Day Spa and Hair Design. Kelly Donnelly with United Way. Thank you for coming today. Remember, next week we'll have Tyann Bowling and Josh Weinstein from Northwind Benefits Group and Wells Fargo on the Affordable Care Act. Thank you. Have a great week.